Blog Talk Radio.
Masonic Effects. It's great to have you here on this, where I am, on this day that is trying very hard to be dreary. For those of you who don't enjoy these kind of seasons, I'm looking at a thin skiff of snow everywhere. It's damp and bleak. It has that grayness that only artists can appreciate, you know, when you're, what tone of, it's not gray, what tone of gray is it? Hello. And just off the top, this is a good time for me to, again, as I do periodically, to give thanks to listeners from around the world. We have some new folks on the horizon here, I noticed. So greetings and thank you for pulling up your chair and relaxing with us with your glass of your favorite beverage close by and these dulcet tones to talk about things Masonic. We have listeners now from the Republic of Serbia. So very pleased. And Greece, hello. And the United Kingdom, hello again. Been a long time. And the Philippines, very, very enthusiastic. I can't explain what has happened to our listeners in South Africa. Hello. A very, very committed bunch of people, yeah? Hmm. And we have the beauty and grandeur of we're reminded of the beauty and grandeur of Brazil by the listeners that are tuning in very regularly. Very, it's been years, hasn't it? And the United States. Well, I would hope that we've met a standard that matches what goes on in the United States and in this country, this Canada, where I am. With all of the privilege that comes from living here, no more satisfying than your own sense of satisfaction with your memories, of your childhood and the best part of your nation growing up, the experiences that shaped you. I've been in a place, I've always grown up in a place where surrounded by people who have that, carry that dignity with them, the nostalgia, the memories of the of home over there, thousands of miles away. And for the most part, we still do. We still see, we're still welcoming people here. Our nation is young, and it needs talent, it needs skills, and it needs people. We're huge landmass. What are we about? We're about 6,000 kilometers wide. We're about 5,000 kilometers across the Atlantic to the continent, and the other way, I'm not sure, between Vancouver and Japan, maybe not quite that far. Huge. So to welcome people to tune in, this is a connection, and I think a very healthy reminder to all of us that we are part of a global condition. Masonry, oh my goodness. Not only does it give us a historical perspective and a philosophical grip, but it is a reminder that, you know, the ritual that we absorb, whatever form it is, there's quite a few, really point us to a reminder of this global community. It appears that we were working on that wavelength. It's somewhere in spite of our politics, in spite of imperialism, you know, colonialism, all that kind of isms, that there was this other group in the Catholicism, I think, you know, the world domination by one faith. Well, in spite of all of that, or through all of that, there came this wizardry, this Mason, Freemasonry, this way of thinking, but that bounced off these other estates and decided a question: is there a way for us to move forward without triggering the response of church and state? And it's an interesting and reasonable challenge. And you think of the chapters in human history that we acknowledge, we have been mining the intellectual fabric of the world for a long, long time, looking for good idea and better idea, different and better ways of doing things, not because of any sense that the metaphor of the machine is in any way superior, but recognizing that there's scratching away at that sense of untapped potential and wondering, it's there, we can say that conceptually, but what do we do? What do we do? Shrug our shoulders and say, well, there's nothing, we can't figure out how to, and then think about what would that mean if we did? Well, we've had some incredible minds over the centuries talking to us about a world of imagination where we can examine those possibilities. What do you think of Thomas More's work, for example? It's very pivotal. The utopia, brilliant. We can live in a utopian state, but he reminds us it comes like everything else at a price. And are we willing to pay that price? Well, you know, if we think about the state of masonry, and let's suggest for argument that one day, maybe 1,000 years from now, or maybe tomorrow, we will have more minds open to the possibilities, to the probabilities, to the potential, that we can rely on judgment more than reaction, that the facts by themselves don't help us move forward, but they provide a context that allows us to exercise what we think, what we call ethics. And the intention is to be consistent, not so much the sameness, the uniformity, but be consistent that each time we're faced with dilemma, we will weigh it through, we'll work it through together. We'll consider the dissenting opinion, we'll consider the people that will be affected, the greater good, and then we will make our decisions and live with the consequences, knowing that we have thought it through. The world that you and I are endorsing isn't always, you know, when we're wrestling to live according to, in pursuit of the truth, it's not pretty. We can't manipulate it. There's no swelling romantic music in the background when you know, whether it's those images that movies create about the brutality of mankind isn't there. The heroic novel isn't there when we're alone or with a few of our friends in nasty conditions doing the right thing. The idea here is that we know how to do the right thing and we know how to acknowledge. And we can acknowledge that because we have some trust that we aren't our value, the kind of thoughtful gentleman that we are, we're not alone, that we don't organize. We're not looking for any kind of, tribe, not that. It's that we are out there all over, everywhere, and we go about our business and we go about exercising these values. And I like the idea. Tell me here if I'm way off base. Regardless of the faith of you listening, tuning in, our schools of thinking, our religions all had a period, or still have a period, where they expanded into the occult elements. Now, I use occult not as a pejorative. As I understand it, a word that was developed to help support some of the major religions, that there's certain practices were, quote, permitted and others were wrong-minded. Many of us were brought up in that kind of an environment. There's certain things that you do not question because they are, quote, wrong-minded or against the beliefs of our faith. But we also are a group of very curious boys that grew up to be very curious men. And those questions about the edges, as I refer to them, the expanse, the depth of these ideas, doesn't stop. If I told you that all astrology was wiped out by modernism, I guess I would have to wonder about these constellations that are named. Wherever you are, we have names that are from the Arab nations. We have Greek and Norse mythology worked into our language patterns. And I'm speaking here primarily, but not exclusively, of the growth of the common language, English. It's becoming more and more not only the language of business and travel, but a connectivity. And you would think this isn't about domination, but inevitably we have to be cautious about those smaller groups that can be consumed. Well, our intention was never to do that, but nevertheless, we have a responsibility to understand that point of view. The world is it can be affected and is being affected by the value structure that we pick up, we learn. One so-called insignificant event at a time, not so insignificant if you're the recipient of some largesse or some sense of generosity or some sense of support, or you're wary of the impersonality of media telling us that they're going to send their thoughts and prayers to out there because of some tragedy, looking for something more. The wound doesn't really heal when you hear that, but it's soothing. And along we come doing something about this state of consciousness without saying, oh my goodness, it's out of control. There's nothing we can do. This is a group. Listeners to the show, do not embrace that idea of powerlessness. We just define it differently. The power that we see around us, you've heard it. You know, if you're a fan of Joseph Campbell, you hear him talk about sending us out there to achieve to find our bliss. We've heard orators throughout the history of humanity talking about the power of love, and makes some of us cringe because we were brought up to think that power is might and it's conquer and domination. And then there are people that we know who haven't had this privileged the existence that some of us had, and have witnessed firsthand the tragedy of occupation, not once, but throughout their history, searching for some type of stability. The difficulty is that it's a wonderful concept. You may think, well, we'll come together, we'll all create this umbrella, and underneath that shield, we'll protect each other. Lovely concept. But the devil's in the details, no pun intended. It may be pun intended. How we do it, that's the artistry, I think. There is no book to tell you, follow these simple rules. There's no commandments, in a sense, that tells us how to go about our dealing with the dilemma that comes up, other than, you know, we can throw a blanket over it and say, this is the formula. This is a formula for success. Well, we know that the problem with formula is that it's never quite complete. So instead, along comes this bunch of thinkers, and they curate these ideas. They pull these ideas together and say, well, the concept is, Graham, you're just an average whatever. And if we expose this kind of guy, you know, he's drifting along flotsam and jetsam of life. What happens if we expose him to amazing ideas? What happens if we challenge him to think, to refute his assumptions, to challenge his conceits? What happens if we start him off saying everything that you've known up to now is probably wrong, that life around you is probably an illusion? Well, the craft didn't come up with the question. They came up with the most wonderful experiment. Let's try. Yes, there's lots of reasons. There's so many reasons, so many people that will point out exactly why this is foolishness, that we should never attempt it. Who cares? I am not my brother's keeper, you know? The world is an ugly jungle, and it's dog eat dog and an eye for an eye. You've heard that. There's some religious groups that brag about it. And then here we are, simple men searching for an understanding and truth. And then if we expose people to wonderful ideas, what would the result be? Well, the craft is that mechanism. That's the craft is the how of that statement. Can we teach men concepts and as adults, and can they absorb them into their fabric, and will it produce the good life and the happiness that Aristotle was arguing about? I'm not saying Aristotle was the Greeks were wonderful, perfect human beings, but they did have some really, really interesting ideas. And this is one of them. The craft has been doing this for a long time, and you and I are part of that diverse group that are working with these ideas. Oh, we're right now where I am. We look around. We have this backstop of suppressing our own originality and thinking to fit in. That's very important in North America, is trying to fit in with the whatever is popular, whatever is trendy in the marketplace. And we don't really ask too many questions about the fickleness of that. And we try very hard, but oh my goodness, you know that the craft is illustrating critical thinking, reasoning, ethics, all those messy terms that just go away. In so many ways, you're going to laugh at me for this, but I think I've been reading again about the Delphic, the Oracle, and remember, it said that that the message, the answer, didn't necessarily have to make sense to the curient. Here's your answer. Go and figure it out. Go and sort it out. You are the one that decides what that means in your life. The oracle wasn't responsible, didn't feel any responsibility for doing that. Now, we know that it wasn't a drive-through kind of an operation. The audiences with the oracle were a few times a year, if that. So it became very important. If you were inclined to make big decisions, then you would want to hedge your bet. And one way of hedging them was to get opinions. So for how many thousands of years have leaders been, kings and despots, been relying on their astrologers to help guide them? Anything that can be predictive has always been reasonably applied. And then in that same school of thinking, puncture the world of superstition to a sense. We don't make it go away, but we puncture it with this whole sense of fact-based decision-making and thinking. We help the world understand things that are almost inconceivable, very, very hard to comprehend. Now I can talk about things that I really struggle to if you asked me to explain them, I certainly couldn't. And foremost on that is time. It's with me. It's been either in my pocket or on my wrist. I'm looking at a watch constantly. My career, my work, all my life is organized around, is scheduled. And yet, like a lot of you, I think that I don't understand it. And when I think about you walking walking along and finding solace and contemplating your nature, I don't think you do it to a schedule. I don't know if time has a bearing. We may be eventually, you know, come to grips and understand time space now. But does it have a bearing? You know, what do I know? What I do know is Masonic Effects is we have a good program today, I think, if I have to blow my own horn. The commentary enabling oneself, some decent music, I think. And we're going to tip into a reminder of history. It just creates a context. You help us to answer that question about the effectiveness of these beautiful ideas, these grand ideas. Does this type of education have merit? Not just because we think it does. And I can believe in unicorns, as the Scottish do. Yeah, that sense of that great potential, the great unknown. But does it? You know, let's put some facts to this. But until we do that, it's time for perhaps a top up here. Go back and check this out. You know, there's lots of things going on. Music makes everything just a little better, doesn't it? Benny Berthium. Thank you. from my favorite movie of all time, made famous in Casablanca. Yeah. Brace yourself. Trays and seats in the upright position. Do up your seatbelts. Enabling oneself. Keeping in mind we are talking about ideals, masonry, it's hardly surprising we labor over the thinking and skills. Each initiate is introduced through the process to a world of expectation. Or we're reminded. So gradually we begin our training and while observing the surroundings. We quickly learn groupthink without knowing it is one of thousands of versions of groupthink. If all we see are shadows on the wall, those outlines are our reality. If nothing else, the craft begins at the beginning. We the ritual, won't mention what that does as a starting point, but you know, you've been there. We face reality as it is in a universe, not of our own making. Fortunately, the trail ahead has touchstones. Expectation changes as societies change, raising our awareness of overarching values and laws that rule us all. We are not masters of all that is. We are participants in a world of constant change. We are told all men are born equipped with reason. Why we choose to create a consciousness of good triumphing over evil? We reach a point of respect of the beliefs of all men, searching and striving for a better life. Has masonry been affected by secularism? Of course. We didn't walk away from questioning. Find the thread that captures your imagination. Track it. Explore as far as you need. That's your masonry. Fortunately, when we gather, we create a fusion of ideas. Is it really so difficult to acknowledge the variations of others? They have their own ideas. Are we so limited that we can't, that we're threatened by the tastes of other people? Oh my, I don't think so. Boys try to best their friends because that is what they're taught. But not all boys, Not all boys. Thank you. Jacques Lussier Trio. Beautiful. Here, we're being reminded of another influence in poetry, and why it's been part of the practice of masonry for so very long. It really does bring a detail to thinking, but just consider this. Poetry like music. This is, comes from something that I recommend. It's a website called Tears in the Fence, an independent international literary magazine. Tears in the Fence. Well worth a link, a look, I think. Poetry like music can provide a kind of atmosphere or to echo or assure a reader, share in their mood or provide one. It can also, like novels, serve as a kind of escape, an allegory, or humor as we face or need respite from life's difficulties. But what I find I come back to poetry for are insights into the deeper question of life, nature, connection, existence, the cosmos. It is not that poetry answers the great questions, but that it asks with us and participates somehow in our being. I like the deep reflective poetry of John Donne, Death Be Not Proud, poems by Gerald Manley Hopkins in moments of depression, but also doubt about belief, and then a reconnection with his God, that is carrion comfort, or Frost poems, which are on one level simple observations of natural spaces he passes along in walks, but on another level have to do with how he decides to live and direct his life, or how he keeps on going. When I think of contemporary poetry, I think these are the things which draw me to authors like Anne Carson, whose poetry contains characters of philosophy and history, and the confusion of every day being that both interrogates my own existence and allows me distance to watch somebody else doing the hard work of wandering along, struggling with life and rejection, meaning and time. Or I think Srikanth Reddy's Facts for Visitors and how native Georgia-born poet Andrew Zawaki and the deep beauty of their poetry. And here. Lastly, I am a poet who has lived across multiple languages and countries. Poetry connects me simultaneously to myself and the world and universe, and I am part of it. And it is a deep form of art, which in this current time is one of the strongest examples of hope, of methods of hoping. That is why I think poetry is fundamental to and for society. And that's written by a poet by the name of Jennifer Dick in 2022. Puts it in context, doesn't it? Here, this the poem today is by a fellow, A.E. Housman. Interesting man. An English scholar and a very celebrated, it said. He was born in 1859, an English guy, and he died in 1936. Now, this is a, like a lot of, you look at the what's recounted by historians about the lives of people. Of course, it's sort of an approximation. But he comes from an emotionally tumultuous background. And he failed his final examination at Oxford, although apparently he was a brilliant scholar. If you've ever been there in those days when you just didn't have it and a lot depended on it and it was the examination, and yet it doesn't diminish the brilliance of the student. Yeah, this is one of those guys. He tended to avoid, it said, the literary world. So he was quite the writer. I know I'll just leave that for you. To sort out, he's not the controversial type, like the guy that died at 20, Percy Shelley. Now think about this guy. He was brutally bullied when he was in school, just treated terribly by one of the Ponzi schools. Yes. Let that be a lesson or a reminder of what goes on, what's really going on. But listen, he died a month before his 30th birthday. This is written by Christopher Hitchings. Yes. And he became oceanic by dying in a tempest on the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And he had Lord Byron as a mourner at his funeral pyre and was in any case partly exempted from the latter's contempt of the otherwise extremely stormy career that he pursued. He continues to lead a sort of double life in our literature, and he first as the author of such nature-loving verses as To a Skylark, and second as a revolutionary whose work in poetry and prose was often considered too incendiary to be published in his own lifetime. He put himself out there. He had a keen sense of persecution from his time at University College at Oxford. He was expelled, unjustly, it's claimed. And yet his themes, you think, oh my goodness, here we go again. But he was putting himself out there to humanity with these tropes. Here. This is A.E. Housman's attempt. It's a short little piece. Into my heart an air that kills from yon far country blows. What are those blue remembered hills? What spires, what farms are those? That is the land of lost content. I see it shining plain, the happy highways where I went and cannot come again. What do you think? There's a message. He wrote this as part of of a group of poems. And like Thomas Hardy, the majority of his poems were written in very plain and direct style. And it's worth examining how Hausmann creates the emotional punch that his poem carries. This is from the set called The Shropshire Lad. And it's one of his most famous. And it can be summarized in brief sentences. The speaker views a distant land and recalls with a certain melancholy nostalgia the hills and spires of his homeland. And he recognizes that while he's happy when he lived there, he cannot return because now he's older and has left that land behind. And there's some subtlety. That air that kills, for instance, is the wind blowing a bad melancholy strain into the very heart of the speaker. Sort of reminds us, I think, that there's a bittersweetness to life. There is always a bittersweetness. Makes you think. Makes you, when you walk past something, whatever it is, do you ever ponder? Do you ever contemplate it, whether it's the sunrise or a drop of dew or the sound of birds in the morning or whatever in your world? Or is it, you know, as harsh as you need it to be? Are you the stoic that it finds any kind of meaning repugnant? Its function and its practicality that is most important. Let's see. Little Scott Hamilton. This helps. Night. I just really enjoy Scott Hamilton, the way he handles the saxophone. Just a quite remarkable musician. I know I'm the only, this is the only place and I'm the only person that's ever thought about, you know, the stratifications and how difficult it is when we're being told in the whisper in this year that we are all equal. Without any instruction about how to do it, it's a belief that we either embrace or we don't. And when I think about it, my message out there is that the cuff on your pants doesn't really determine much about what's going on in your mind. Think about Cincinnatus, you know, think about the Roman general, the conqueror who saved Rome. And as soon as the triumphs were over, what did he do? He didn't head to the Senate. He resigned and went back to his farm. How dare he? And they went and got him again, you know, because the stupidity knows no bounds. And they needed him again and had to convince him, you know, stop farming. What's wrong with you? Aren't you loyal? Blah, blah, blah. Some things don't really change, do they? Now, what we've been talking about is this sense of superiority that, and we know it happens. I don't have a problem. Maybe you agree. I don't have a problem with birds of a feather flocking together. I don't want, you know, if somebody is a particular social strata and they form a lodge and practice masonry, more power to them. More power to them. And whether you're a group of artists or a group of tradesmen, doesn't matter, or your pressmen or your poets, it doesn't matter. The idea of coming together and having some common links can be a leg up for a lot of fellows coming into the order to try and make sense, because the challenge is there for all of us after this initiatory process. That's a big part of that's quite distinct. Now we're talking about this is a reminder, the aristocrats in La Candeur Lodge in Strasbourg, and this other upstart, La Sainte Genevieve, and the criticism that went both ways. You know, oh, those bloody aristocrats are just terrible. And oh, that riffraff, they let anybody in. Here, I'll just pick it up in midstream. Similarly, the orators maintain that while the degrees and grades awarded within the Masonic hierarchy are valued, in this lodge, it is clear that we do not only accord our esteem to marks externally honorable, these all too often carry false merit. We do not only accord our esteem to marks externally honorable. Think about that. Outside, you bring whatever mention of your brilliance and success. So we recognize that. However, these all too often carry false merit. Oh, my goodness. There's a term that has been following me like a cloud for a long time. What that is. At the death of a brother who had not participated in the higher degrees of the order, his internal virtues and merit are extolled and self-consciously contrasted to the external symbols of status. His civil and Masonic merits are what must be remembered. The eulogizer is then quick to point out that Freemasons reject all materialism, the credo of esprit fortes, the glorification of achievements in this world, regardless of birth, implied a metaphysic association with the most virulent of Enlightenment heresies, with free thinking and materialism. Ugh. The orator was intent upon distancing his brothers from anything so heretical and controversial. Any familiarity there? There is certainly where I am. Yes, certainly. There is familiarity. And I don't know if it's intentional, you know. And, you know, does it matter? Well, I think it does. You know, the idea that we are always conscious of our motivations and the drives, I don't think that's reasonable. But on reflection, we're capable of far more, of course. But here we have messaging. Yeah? And does it fit with the – does it still fit? I don't think talking about the material from 18th century Strasbourg lodges is exactly triggering this whole, oh, my goodness, we have the same kind of problem here. Well, I don't think so. That was somebody, that was history over there. Does it have relevance? Well, if we're fickle and we're chasing around every inoculation of history and then trying to apply it, we're all the favored sons of our moms. And it's because we have a modicum of intelligence, once we set out to find something, it becomes self-fulfilling. You know, we like consistency, and we have bias. We look for consistency. So along you and I come, and we're going to talk about the effect of new ideas. But we have a very strong bias that, and our brain functions this way. If it's inconsistent, if it's dystonic, we have tremendous difficulty absorbing that. Unless we're looking at it in a sense think of ourselves in a laboratory and we're looking for the particular effect that hasn't happened before. And we're looking through a microscope and my goodness, we have created that effect. At first, it's like, oh, that must be a mistake. Oh, we'll run the experiment a second time and oh my goodness, we got the same result. Well, that's the deal, isn't it? That somebody can take your findings and replicate it and get the same results. That's the surprise moment. We have that consistency, and then we try and understand what it is that we've found, and the world goes on. I'm not going to belabor the point, but you get it. We are consistent in so many ways, but that's us. That's us. We are consistent. And we need to reason things through. If we're going to be that better men. It means, when you think about it, shifting our thinking. I don't know if it's as grinding as admitting failure. I don't think it's that's insulting. I don't think anybody gets anywhere feeling. I think that's more the processes going on behind a man's eyes to determine that the value of if I embrace the values of Freemasonry, it means that I am somehow inferior. Oh my goodness, that's who could argue? You know, if a person has that mindset, they have that mindset. This is pointing out, hey, you're very talented. Have you ever thought about this? And what's your thoughts? You're restricting yourself, my friends, my brethren. It's hard to know what to let go of and what to embrace. But we know when we're really screwing up, and we know when we're faking it. We've declared, and this is where the initiation becomes our director. We agreed on faith that we're going to do certain things. We're going to think certain ways, and we're going to accept the definitions, you know, of honor and dignity that are given to us, that sense of renewal and rebirth, that we're going to accept all of that. But my goodness, imagine, think about it. We're going to, we don't erase that part of our history up to that moment, but the context changes. It's one thing to say, to look at the world and say, there's potential out there. I can do this. I have barriers. I'll acknowledge them, but I can do this. And I can demonstrate to myself self-improvement. I can do that. And I don't need to have an award or anything named after me. I can do that privately within my own thoughts. And as a matter of fact, it reminds us that everything around us is a mental process. Oh, I hate that. I hate that kind of those damn occultists. It's time to move along. Thanks for sitting in. I hope it's been informative, and I hope you've enjoyed the program today. We've as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. It's fun to think that there's endless possibility and potential. I have particularly enjoyed a lot of this music today, and I hope you continue to commit those acts of random Masonic kindness out there, and find the music within you. We'll see you in a week. Peace and love. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.